Our Lady of Perpetual Scowl, brazen is your anger, call it a glow-up. Contend, O Mother, take shield and buckler, brandish paring knife and vacuum rod, and lo, a star. Corinthians 11:10, ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels? Angels in the kitchen cupboards perched between the peanut butter and the Fruit Loops. Miracle upon miracle, your child laughing with his head flown back, spray of golden curls, the pink cathedral of his mouth, small rapture of the morning.
Let's give Liz another hand and bring up Anna Johnson.
Hi, everyone. Great to be here. I think I always stand like really close to this, don't I? Okay, I'll try and be not as close. Oh, gosh, so many people. So great. So I have three things to say really fast. One is I'm holding these workshops, and they're on Monday nights at Crave, 6:30 to 8. Every Monday, there's some flyers in the back. And I wrote this last night at the workshop, and I kind of edited it a little bit today. That's the first thing I'm going to say. The second is that was the second that I wrote it last night. And I edited today. The third and last, before I read it, is, it's in first person, right? So it's I, but it, so you know, it's a character. That's what they all say. Okay. Love set match. Love set you spinning. Our first year of bachelor's, I won. A big fat win. What did I win exactly? The slapped protection of my heart and breast, shielding from your bold ace. You were too busy for me, blank as a wall, not enough time to rally on my birthday, leaving me clutching an empty bottle of green fizz. What a celebration that was. Lobbying with you was a game of life and death. Our clouded voices echoed, magnifying the shade you shed, reminding me I may have failed first year hadn't I followed your studious ways. My parting haze brewed only self-effacement in the back end of loss. Match point, flunking an exam or two, a distant slice hovered in my ear at the wind's net, demanding I study. End of first year in summer when no one else did on the baseline. I barely scraped the smash with a pass, 40%, and then 3 years later, 40 love. The love I left on that hearty labyrinthian court, stringing you stranded. Ah, that's the problem with phones. I found it. Pow, pong. I had moved out from the one-bedroom student apartment we shared after exams. You still had a few to go. Boned bed, the other boy kissed me by the tennis courts, throwing grass at me, threatening to make a breath line pass through to heaven between games, white lines swallowing my dreary eclipse. My flirting, floating, hadn't escaped him. Shining skin, I had picked up my racket many times during those 3 years to truly play. No more tournaments, though. Only the tormenting weight of books and tests. I played with Jeff and John and Andrew. You didn't mind. I didn't know then you needed solitude. 10,000 strands swallowed by the opaque ceiling. Once your exams were over, how classy I looked. Foot fault, sitting in your apartment's living room on the brown leather couch, calmly telling you it was over. Our 3 years done, just like that. You swung around, arching over my scalp, yanking our Montmartre caricature off the wall, violently tearing it in two, my full set of horse teeth, your polka-dotted giraffe neck. I had never seen your cheeks flush, your nostrils flare, your voice raised by 10,000 decibels as you threw some other items I don't remember around, culminating in tearing another drawing from that infamous Paris market. This one was a true thin penciled portrait. Two lost souls, ready to love, yet unready to witness the multitude of our inner beings reflected in the foggy, fermented mirror of life.
Let's give Anna another hand and bring up Harlequin Crowe.
So, the offer. I see the flash of shadow, the shattering blade, the shield hacked to splinters, the desperate escape. I see how deeply your body aches, bruised and hurt in ways that leave more than just physical scars. I see the crystal sliver embedded in your heart, a dark thing congealed from another's pain, conspiring to poison a spirit disposed to grace. And I also see the spark beneath it all, the light you refuse to let fade, sustained despite pain demanding you abandon love, justice, hope, and every other beautiful ideal. A spark I'd see grow, see flare into a beacon bright enough to light a way to every better tomorrow, banish the shadows of today with strength already yours, the power of a gentle heart to rise above its scars.
Bruce will be the last reader of this round, and then we'll take a break. And is there anybody who came in late who wants to read in the second half?
If you did, I will. Were you in first?
Yeah, well, you'll be on the first half of the second round. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Let's give Harlequin another hand and bring up Bruce.
Let's give Meg a hand, too, for taking over tonight. And before I read, just a couple of more things. Again, from the bottom of our heart and my heart for sure, thank you, Logan. Thank you, Juno, for your wonderful poem. Let's give him a hand. And Grace as well, who's taking very good care of us tonight. And if you're not tired of clapping, and you shouldn't be, give yourselves and everybody else a wonderful hand. I was sitting somewhere, I don't remember where it was, and some cafe might have been here even. And a young couple walked by me, and for some reason it just, as if I almost transported, so... and became as if clairvoyant or something like that. Anyway, that's where this came. And I usually don't introduce poems, and now I know why. It's called Walking By and Away. Inside a cafe, a young couple walks by me. And immediately I'm swept up from here to the future. Not really mine, but theirs. And I can sense in it no more, truly see them standing together there as she becomes disenchanted, no longer madly in love with him long before he feels any of those about her. For years in that, they will get by, waltz around each other, find excuses to be or do something alone. They cope. From time to time, still though, as years slip by, they wander back to the warmth of the past, especially on holidays or in those times of nostalgic grief. There in either times, they comfort, hold each other, after days turned months, then longer, of not noticing. And they fall prey back to the seeming endless detachment and kind of loneliness that wears itself simply as brevities of emptiness. All things change. All things always change. Even this. As I still floating beside or just above and looking down the long path of their lives. There, decades later, I see them still together and with others I do not know. There in some sort of celebration. They incredibly happy together. And I hope that they, in even their worst of times, can see that far down their full paths to that place then. Thank you. And you just heard from beginning at 4 o'clock, actually, the first full round of the March 3rd and the Journey Continues open mic at the Elm Cafe, readings by Malcolm Cullen, Vicky Langille, Leili Jamali, Sarah Emtage, Michael Flaho, Leanne Terrace, Sonali Samaya, Meg Freer, Juno, Bruce Cudmore, Val, Leo Roberts, John Mahan, Joseph Elliott, Taylor Davies, Paige Cello, Fiona McMillan, Jane McDonald, Eric Folsom, Callista Markotich, and Liz Huntley Gents, Anna Johnson, Harlequin Crow, and then me. Just a quick reminder before we move on, something I like to do at the end of each hour or segment is to remind you that every week I upload both hours of my show to this show to my personal blog space for it shortly after I get home at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. They do remain there for 3 years. Before we move on, I'd just like to say thank you very much to all of you out there for tuned into the show today. Would also like to thank all of those who participated in the event that evening, to our barista Grace, who took great care of us, and of course to Logan and the Elm Cafe for always caring and being such a supporting host and venue. And also Juno, who read a poem for her first time there that night. So it is 13 minutes after 5 o'clock. I'll tell you what, let's do this, and I'll be right back.
The thing I want to mention.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
Hello and welcome to Salt Licht in Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licht in Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Vibes? You know about vibes?
The mood.
The mood.
The mood.
The mood.
The mood.
The mood.
With me.
Tune in every Wednesday from 10 until 11 a.m. while I explore themes, atmospheres, or moods across genres and decades. Whether I'm scoring a scene or doing a genre deep dive, there'll be something for everyone.
I'll give you another tune to help your appetite.
The mood with me.
On radio.
CFRC.
The best radio station we've ever heard.
And it is about 15 minutes after 5 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And again, this is Finding a Voice. We do also stream online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And so coming up in this second hour, you'll hear readings by, well, I should say what you're going to hear first. We're moving now into the second round of that March 3rd, and the journey continues. Open mic event held monthly at the Elm Cafe. And in it, in this second round, you're going to hear readings by Earl Collier, Jace Elliott, Blair Richards, Malcolm Nolan, Leili Jamali, Sarah Emtage, Sonali Samaya, Meg Freer, Bruce Cudmore, Val, Leo Roberts, Joseph Elliott, Jane McDonald, Callista Markotich, and me. First, my usual hourly mention is that some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language. I try to preserve it as much as possible to maintain the creative integrity of both the author and the piece, but sometimes I have to cut a little bit. So anyway, here we go. Again, I just mentioned everyone you're going to hear and in the order you're going to hear them. So pretty tight hour this time. So let's go ahead and just move straight into it. And again, that night, Meg Freer was the MC. So here we go. Welcome back to round two, everybody. Thanks to all of you who are sticking around. And you know what? I had so much just kind of sitting over there doing nothing. I think I'm going to do that again. I'm going to turn it over to Meg. So thank you.
Hey, let's bring up Earl Collier. Start us off.
Hello, everybody. I'm Earl. So it's my first time here. I'm Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. I've been living in Kingston for 13 years, and I've been away from creative people for too long, so I feel like I need to get back into that groove. I wrote poetry my entire life. Started when I was a teenager. Went to college to study philosophy and published a few poems then, and then realized that philosophy and poetry weren't that useful and went on with my life. But just in the last few months, I got this bug that I had to start writing again. And I've been churning out a lot of stuff, and I'm committed myself to finishing a book in 2 years. Whether or not it's going to get published, I don't care. So I was looking for poetry in Kingston, and I came across this cafe, and I'm glad I did. Really love the vibe here. This poem is based on an imaginary memory about my childhood and my spiritual journey and how it started. And I imagine myself as an infant. It's called A Fire Ensues by Dawn.
It's called what?
A Fire Ensues by Dawn. Winds murmur in the paint-chipped window frame. Frost sighs across the bumpy floor. Lime-green fractals splashed on stained white linoleum. Musky dated decor. An oaken cradle sways near a curtained archway. Beyond it, wheezy snores hum a strange lullaby. A leaky faucet keeps frantic cadence. As a cradle rocks, then abruptly stops, squeaks to a stillborn stop. A child shifts. Soft-slippered steps move swift. A bucket is lifted from a cluttered corner. A hinge wails metallic as the stove's mouth opens, and a shovel heaves salvation upon a fire. Above hangs a framed weeping idol, Christ and his heart ensnared. Coals sear and sing. Embers leap in orange and red arcs. The iron stove stands like a relic from an age of stern warmth. Thorns bleed beneath the glass. Frail hands weave smoke like a prayer. A soot-stained poker stirs the flare. Dim light quivers through shadows. A rocking chair starts a steady wooden hymn as Christ watches from a papered wall. An old Bible is opened. Scriptures bless the morning star. Whispered verses drift like a spell, soft, unfurling syllables, closer to divinity than any lips could ever pray. Fresh eyes open, tears immaculate spring. Gray-lined hands wipe them gently, a womb-like gesture to innocence. Music echoes from the back room, a vinyl revelation. A child gazes at the framed figure and coos at some mystery salvation. And a fire ensues by light of dawn. A fire ensues by light of dawn. A face takes shape within the newborn sight, a forge between babe and Christ. Sunlight glimmers through frosty glass. A protective figure leans close. Ears are etched in beautiful folds, eyes warm, hair like silver ash. The air is lilac and lingering smoke. A blue-gray falcon of haze spirals incandescent rays. A clock chimes and notions flutter, wails for mother's milk, beckon return. She prostrates upon the splintered dawn. The framed Christ slips. It falls to the uneven floor and shards of glass flitter past. Cries swell, a fire swoons, a nurturing embrace. On her angelic face is ephemeral grace, both beautiful and effaced. A broom appears, fragments of Christ are swept across the damp linoleum. Jesus wept to suffer the children his everlasting light. Now nothing remains where a Savior was, only a nail and her enduring love, holding fast without fail above all things. And a fire ensues by light of dawn. A fire ensues by the light of dawn.
Give Earl another hand and bring up Jace Elliott.
Oh God, there's a lot of people. A longtime listener, first time speaker, I guess. So I wrote this a long time ago when I was a teenager, but it's still accurate. It's called Funny Little Fears. If I were a little bumblebee, I wonder, what would my fears be? Would I fear the winds are so strong, or that my journey could be too long? If I were a little sea otter, floating out on the open water, would I fear the deep fathoms below, or that I'd swam so far with nothing to show? If I were a horse, running wild and free, of course, would I fear the winters of cold and ice, or the predators who are never nice? If I were a house cat, old, comfortable, and fat, would I fear of being too lax, or not having enough snacks? If I were someone other than me, what could I be? Would I be free from my fears, or would I simply be free? Be free to be me. Thank you.
Let's give Jace another hand and bring up Blair Richards.
Hello, this is my first time here, and I have to figure out where I left the page I was going to read from. Thank you so much. There are 100,000 songs about the river, and there will be 100,000 more. The feelings of the earth herself are in those watery veins. Never will I say anything true enough to ride her waves like the rising, setting sun, holding her gentle ripple. This rock by her side, she'll flow around until time takes it all. I'll slowly dissolve. One day, you'll look on and just walk away, like the stars turn in the sky. I'll keep asking why and sing to the river 1,000 more songs about letting go. Until I lose my voice to her waters and slowly erode back into what I've always never been, a voice riding the river on its way from everything standing still. 100,000 voices on the rising, falling, setting sun being carried.
Let's give Blair another hand and bring back up Malcolm Nolan.
So this one's a tribute to the people who come here to read. So this is for you. And it's called, what is it called? It's called Poets' Art Beheld, an Ode to Poets. Apocryphal gonzo absurdists plucking salient abstractions from the shadows, hammering circular non sequiturs through square holes, a zoetrope stocked with a melange of incantations, a self-replicating mystery laboring in secret, struggling, suffering in anything but silence, unheard. Weighed down, the oppressive anchor of invisibility on a moored ship called obscurity. I'm here to let you know. I see you. I see you grasping at the frayed end of a rope braided from linguistic fallacies, scratching at the mortar of a brick wall in a philosophical dead-end alley, practicing a sales pitch for a discontinued culture in the vacant hallway of an abandoned era, barking thanklessly of the wrong paradox on your way back from an oxymoron. I see you weaving Persian flaws into the tapestry you embroider with your character. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Art is the act of turning pain into beauty, keeping in mind that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But like I just said, I see you. I am he who beholds. Therefore, it is my blessed duty to inform you. You are the most beautiful art ever witnessed. Thank you.
Let's give Malcolm another hand and bring up Layli Jamali.
This is a piece which follows the storm warning. It was the tomorrow and everywhere was covered by snow, including the balcony that I was just looking at, so this came out. It is called The Crystal Bride. There she lay on my balcony, soft as snow, resting her head just above the heavy doorway. She was wearing a white long gown, glittery, light and curved, an exquisite piece, coutured just to fit her perfect shape, made of the most elegant satin duchesse and iced out diamonds, all handpicked. I am not seeing her face from the spot I am positioned, in my cold and empty room, stretching on my rough couch, wrapped up in my coarse blanket. I can just see that she is unmoving, sleeping calmly in all her beauty and grace, peaceful, pure, and whole, except for that black foot which has landed right at the middle of her chest, slightly towards the left, exactly at the point where her heart must be. But I know that foot, that wobbly leg. It belongs to the old and ugly chair I brought home one day from a dumpster, thinking that it would be good enough to sit on and to trust. What a shame. What a waste. My bad.
Let's give Layli another hand and bring up Sarah Emtage.
So Leo and I are representing the library today. So I do have a somewhat library-ish poem. I was looking through, I think on my lunch break, I was looking through old poetry because I wanted to remember when I had written a particular poem, and I found out it was like way back in like 2014. I was like, wow. But then this is actually, I also came across this somewhere between the intervening years. This was from 2017, and I barely remembered writing it. Hadn't looked back at it since. And it was... I mean, I had to fix it a little bit, just a little bit, but it's mostly how it was, and I found it kind of delightful to read, so I figured I'd share it. Okay. I think it's called Scaraski. Okay. I am looking for a library book that I took to the park where the baobabs look very dark in the bite of their bark. Now I'm back on the track, and I'm still on the hook in the case to be cracked of the runaway book. I find a feather on the path, hear a cry from the darkling trees, a cry of lonely greed and wrath. It's the cry of the awful Scaraski. A Scaraski is a cross between a magpie and a rattlesnake, guarding its loot in a dark ravine and taking every chance to take. I toss a rock to find its nest and take cover when the aim proves true. Have you seen such a feathered pestilence coming furiously in search of you? I hold still till it passes on, then climb up to its littered lair. Actually, it should be climbed down if it has a nest in a ravine. Sorry, I'm just realizing that. Anyway, I climb to its littered lair, and there find the book I thought was gone, plus a lifelong supply of kitchenware. Thank you.
Give Sarah another hand and bring up Sonali Samaya.
So I've been a bit of an angry woman recently. Not recently. Just writing about it recently. I think as women we all realize that we get put in boxes and you know, you're not just the crappiness of being a woman, there's also like the certain crappiness of the type of woman that you are too, and as someone who developed very early, I realized what type of woman I was going to be perceived as, and no matter what I dressed as or presented myself as, it didn't change the type of woman I was going to be perceived as. So this is called An Angry Set of Double D's. If I could be dainty and pretty, would I be soft on the eyes and the ears too? If I could be indie film camera scented and a freckled nose, would I be less fuckable to you? If perhaps I were more delicate, would men look at me less like a vulgar pickup line, a one-night stand, a body than a face, maybe a woman, never a person? Would they no longer see me as prey? Could I be missed after I'm desired if my collarbone stuck out a bit more, if I was thinner and not in the eat a burger way, but in the 15-minute lower belly fat burning Pilates routine way? I understand that these women, too, have their own particular set of struggles. It's our God-given right as women to never exist comfortably at all. But I sometimes wish my womanhood spent less time looking at my tits. Thank you.
All right, let's give Sonali another hand. That's kind of a hard act to follow. This is called She Cycles Alone. For 8 years, they cycled together in city and countryside, shared the roads and their lives, until the day she found the home office door closed, felt heavy resistance on the other side, knew someone else should open that door. What she didn't know, what wasn't shared during those 8 years, what his family told her later, of depression and refusing medication, as if part of him wanted to be a book on a shelf, hidden between other books, one she would never find, or a room in a house, a room she couldn't enter. Mm-hmm. And Juno's not here, so let's bring up Bruce Cudmore.
Hello again, a shorter poem called Settled. The hungry shriek of the bird of prey echoed around me. Not sure where the real threat lived, I shuddered. I will never forget the mountain ridge that was your arm around my shoulders and the tectonic shift when it settled.
Let's give Bruce another hand and bring up Val.
This one's called Ox Tongue. A boy in my chemistry class grabbed my tongue, piercing a hole through the meat. I went to grab his back so both of us would be left lisping. His tongue was warm and wet and pulsing. He dared me to keep holding it. He liked feeling as my hand cramped. I dropped his tongue as mine went dry.
Let's give Val another hand and bring up Leo Roberts.
So I realized in the middle of last round that as of today I've been coming here for 3 years. The kind of Cliff's notes of what brought me here was I was in computer science and so sad about it. I didn't know anyone that like read a book. And I was running away from someone and I have all of you now. So this space generally has changed my life, so thank you all of you, and thank you Bruce for starting this all. Yeah. I need to ungraciously tie this into the library, so I wrote this at a workshop I did at the library. There we go. There was once a meadow that I lost, where the wind brushed long grass and a pond shone in the afternoon's caress. Close your eyes, darling. Help me dream of somewhere new. The meadow's gone forever, but I don't need it if I have you.
Okay, let's give Leo another hand and bring up Joseph Elliott.
Thank you. I feel like I should also plug the event that Liz is running. When is it on the 21st? It's the 21st in the West End. She'll explain it better. I'll be there. I went to the last one. It was fantastic. Which reminds me, do you have a book that I'm going to buy from you here today?
Oh, I
forgot. Next time. All right. Anyway, with that preamble, I work on the East End, and I walk the same trail every day, unless the weather's like really bad. Like summer, winter, whatever, and I keep thinking I'm going to run out of like things to write about out there, but it hasn't happened yet. With that, and yet, a few stubborn leaves all winter. And yet, a few stubborn leaves all winter.
Give Joseph another hand and bring up Jane McDonald.
Well, I'm delighted I'll be reading with Joseph. Yay. Yeah, at Liz's event on March 21st at where she is. I've got it written down in my phone, but it sounds great. I better shut up tonight, honest to God. Okay, this one is called Great Lake.
And it has an epigraph from the dearly departed Don Domanski from his book Foundlings. Nova Scotia poet, kind of an ecstatic. If you haven't met Don Domanski's work, I highly recommend him. Anyway, Great Lake. All the birth and death blossoming out of that darkness. Later each morning, the sun in November blazes again in the trees. A west wind shoves the lake's great surface, a stone slab. It breaks in waves on the limestone shore, covered now until spring. Drawn from bed, not by song, but persuaded, I rise, I try. My car's tires keep losing air. Rob, raven's wing hair, blue bottle fly shop jacket, runs his hand over. There's wear, he says, but the tire is not done. Embarrassed by my gratitude, I thank him anyway. Every day sooner, light ends in November, a great slate lowering on ragged pearl light, and the people of Rochester, who live on that southern shore, seeing sometimes a devouring, sometimes a dome.
Let's give Jaina another hand and bring up Callista Marketage.
So someone mentioned something about discontinued culture. So I think this is maybe about a discontinued culture, but someone else mentioned about not running out of things to write about. And I think if I run out of things to write about, I unfortunately maybe, I hope not, but possibly go into the past, like my past. And so a lot of them end up being memories. And this one is a memory. And it's called Rosary on the Road Trip. I don't know whether you know what a rosary is, but it's like it's a set of beads, and each bead is a prayer. Actually, most of them are Hail Marys, but they don't resemble your Hail Mary. But anyway, it takes a long time. But when we used to go on road trips, my parents would, we had to say the rosary. That was just one of the things we had to do when we started out. And after it was over, we were free to have more fun. So, Rosary on the Road Trip. Goodbye, Windsor. Goodbye, skyline of Detroit, rising up from cornfields. Hello, faint, exotic mist of skunk on Highway 2 at dawn. And Mum and Dad sleep-starved up front in the 49 Ford, while in the back we pinched and giggled and teased. By Chatham, they trussed us up in chains of 59 bone beads in sing-song supplication to the Blessed Virgin Mary, the rosary's hypnotic heaviness ballast to our giddy sibling silliness of the road. We'd be finished by London, our own roles self-admired, intoning our petitions when it was our turn to lead. Jol prayed the big prayer for world peace, the conversion of Mother Russia. Good little John requested food for starving children of the world. And in some rocky grotto, Mary, wearing blue, inclined her gentle ear to hear our pleas. At Tilsonburg, crops were shoulder high and silos point to heaven. Jol elbowed her way to the window seat with a sly side eye at me. I killed her with daggers in my eyes. John prayed on and made mean plans to get us both in trouble. Mum, Dad, did you believe? Did you? Surely doubts disturbed you? So nimbly we raced our bony beads through small, impatient fingers, so glibly begging favors. We told John the beads were made from bones of frisky little goats from a cloistered monastery. You'd think they'd have grown heavier. The beads, passing again and again through fingers grimy or greasy or popsicle sticky, pulled from pockets full of corner store loot. But no, in time, as we lightened the load on Mary, our beads grew airy and barely there. I see them as weightless now, translucent, somewhere vaguely in the sky, their chain a silvery filament fastened to Mum and Dad. With wholehearted love and a touch of grief, I give them leave to yank it if I am mean, if they think that I deserve it. And otherwise, petitions could be the same today. For Ukraine, as early sun gilds the tassels of grain in the far fields. For Gaza, as earth's warm breath of morning rises slow above the swales off Highway 2, off and away on a road trip out of Windsor.
Oh, she said no?
Yeah.
Oh.
Liz?
Sorry,
no?
My fault.
Anybody else before Bruce reads the last poem of the night? No? Okay, let's bring up Bruce and give Callie another hand.
Before I do this, you, all of you and all the people that even left are the ones that make this the wonderful reading series that it is, so give yourselves and everybody else another hand. And in the distance, I'll clap a little louder, Logan and Juno and Grace behind the counter there. And our next reading here is going to be April, I think it's 7th. It's the first Tuesday of the month, and I believe that's April 7th. So this is called Ever Echoes. Heard an echo this morning, faint but real. Arriving here, getting here, ricocheting off 75 separate rock ledges in succession, one for each year. That sound echoed was that of a first year and then each one after tripping over itself, trying to become new again and not knowing anything about years, or echoes, or time, or me, or how exact an echo can be, and how it takes a person with them as it travels to that next place, that next ledge coming. Thank you very much.
And you just heard from in this second hour now from again the second round of the March 3rd and the Journey Continues open mic readings at the Elm Cafe. In that series, you heard readings by Earl Collier, Jace Elliott, Blair Richards, Malcolm Nolan, Layli Jamali, Sarah Emtage, Sonali Samaya, Meg Freer, Bruce Cudmore, Val, Leo Roberts, Joseph Elliott, Jane McDonald, Callista Markotich, and then me. Tell you what, it is about 49 minutes after 5 o'clock. Tell you what, let's do this, and we'll be right back.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM.
And again, you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And it is about 51 minutes after 5 o'clock. We're getting very close to the end of the show. And I do have a final song to take us out of here just before I leave. But the first thing I'd like to do is thank each of you out there for having tuned into the show today. I would also like to thank all of those who participated in the event that evening, to our barista, Grace, who took great care of us that night, and of course, always to Logan and the Elm Cafe for being such caring and supportive host and venue. And it was so cool that Juno read there that night as well. So that was cool. Also, just a quick reminder before we move on, something I do at the end of each hour or each segment of the show, I guess, is remind you that both hours, I do upload both hours of this show to my personal blog space for it shortly after I get home, and gets uploaded to Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. They do remain there for 3 years, and I do hope you can stay tuned at the top of the hour for 2 hours of East Coast music in a show called Saltwater Music. That's hosted by Rob Carnell. And then also following that, Salt Licked In Rapture is a newer show and a wonderful show with Nishan. And I hope you can stay tuned for that as well. The song I've chosen to take us out of here is, I really like this album. It's Yola Tango. It's off of their 1999 album called And Then Nothing Turned Itself Inside Out. The cut you're going to hear is called Every Day. And I hope it works while this CD acts up. So we'll see. We'll keep my fingers crossed. Anyway, have a great evening, a great weekend, and I hope to catch you here next week. And again, stay tuned for actually 3 hours in those two shows I mentioned of some great music coming up. Anyway, here we go.